My name is Tarek. Welcome to Storm's YouTube channel.
Oh, wait, what about this then? So if people remember, after this was like right back to, again, the same form I was talking about with FaZe at the end of 2022, you won the Pro League, but then the team was just a bit up and down. It's like classic FaZe. Like, every game's really hard. You have to battle back through the tournament. So like, one of the ones I did think was dope, even though it got cut short, was that major run. Because like you say, it looked like it was a repeat of Rio. It was like, oh, bloody hell, they're in the same spot. They're playing against Bad News Eat. Oh, Lord. Like, it looked like the same thing was going to happen. But after that, like, you guys almost turned it into an epic comeback through the whole tournament. Like, people probably remember that game against Na'Vi. Mate, if we're talking about, like, matches FaZe has won that should be unwinnable, I don't even know how that third map that Anubis was ever won. Like, the joke is, I'm pretty sure if I interviewed every Na'Vi player, they'd say that game was over. Like, it was over, right? You guys weren't even that good on Anubis at the time. Give me some thoughts about this match. It seems like an impossible match.
That was an interesting one. Obviously, a very brokey, dominant performance on Anubis. I think he had like a 40 bomb at the end of overtime. But I mean, it was 15-9. Na'Vi's on T side with 15 rounds, and it is a T sided map.
Yeah. So you would especially back then at the beginning. Yeah, of course.
The map was pretty much over, I would say. But I don't know what happened. But we just we didn't crumble under the pressure. We didn't crack. Sometimes you could talk between players, communicate, and you could hear the voices like starting to like drop off. It's not the same intensity. Like, you could hear it talking. They're not talking as confidence, but I don't think nothing happened there. We just kept playing as we did regularly. And I mean, we had already done so many comebacks at that point. So our major life was on the line. And I mean, we had nothing else left to do than just play round by round and just to believe. And well, it's the number one thing we do in any comeback is to play round by round. And you can't look ahead, because that's when you make a mistake. You have to treat every single moment as it's your last round that you play, and that's the only way you're going to make that comeback.
For people who don't know as well, that match that we're referencing of the rematch of Bad News Eagles at the Major, that was the one, right, that you did that bonkers, like, Mirage clutch on, where basically you probably should have been out of the tournament, right? Like, wasn't that, am I thinking of the right match?
Yeah, it's a round we look back sometimes as a team. Personally, I think it's the best round I've ever played in my career.
Was it all actually conscious, by the way? Was a bit of it fluke? Like, because if like a bit of it was like, did you really have it timed out as to where they could be?
A lot of the timings were luck in that moment. But definitely, I think if I didn't say, like, I didn't call for destiny before, but I don't know if that round was kind of destiny. We were meant to be in the playoffs of that major. Because if you look back on that round, I mean, the round is, it's round 30 on Mirage against B&E. And it's basically like a 1-on-3 on B side. Brokey is alive, but he's on the other side of the map. And it's like 20 seconds left. I have the bomb, and there's three CTs basically swarming me. And I hit like four or five timings around the corners, dodging everyone perfectly, not getting double peaked. If I die there, we're out of the major basically, and B&E get the chance to go to playoffs. So that's why I probably call it one of the best rounds of my career. The other one is always the one against G2 in Katowice. Sure. But this B&E one also is, I think, the same, if not better, because it's like the highest pressure you can have. It's one round away from being eliminated from a major, and you're going to the playoffs. So it's insane that round, what happened there. And I look back at it so often, because sometimes when you have like bad moments, you lose a tournament, you lose an important match, you want to look back on what was the good that you've achieved, and just to have some good memories and remind yourself. And, you know, that's the rounds I often look back on, because it was looking pretty grim in that scenario, but it's like, it's the round which can show you that you can easily turn it around so easily.
obviously this has become almost just as fierce as a team at this point in time. Like, you notice I always used to get mad at this when fans would be like, oh, they're just lucky. They just win like these close games and overtimes. I'm like, yeah, but if they do that all the time, it can't be luck anymore. There's obviously something about their, like, the fundamental qualities of the team or the players or the mix or something. So similarly, initially people said some of these rounds you won, some of these bonkers clutches were flukes, but you've done it too many times now. Like, do you actually see yourself, is this like a strength of yours? Do you see yourself as someone who is there to win clutch rounds, being a closer, as it were?
I think what's helped me over the years is people just labeling me as a passive player.
Okay.
Because now that I have the experience of playing passive, and I like to play a lot of aggressive rounds now as well, in like RCT rounds and even T rounds, I have this good, really good feel of when to play passive, when to play aggressive, and that also translates into the clutches. So even when people think it's left alive, it's robbed, they might think I'm going to come in really slow, really passive, but I might always have like an ace up my sleeve and get an aggressive play and then surprise people. Like, that kind of experience has, I think, shaped me a lot by now, and I know how to balance things.
Do you think when you are in like a 1v3 or 1v4 that it looks impossible to win, do you think opponents now, when they see it's ROPS on the scoreboard, do you think they play differently?
It depends on the round, but I think in some scenarios they do. It definitely depends on what kind of or what type of scenario you're in. Can you play it safe, or can you play it even safer? Or if you have to play high risk, you just take the duel, you know, these sort of things. But if there is a mistake to be made, I always try to find it in a clutch, and that's when you can find the win. It is obviously hard to win like 1-on-4, but 1-on-3s more often, you can find a player off the guard, and like more often than not, if I'm in a clutch, I probably already have a good position, and I can find a player off the guard and then have like a 1-on-2 or a 1-on-1, and then having that good aim is a thing that can always help you.
Are you someone, by the way, one thing I would love to know, because it's not something people ask pros, but it's something I always think about, because every Counter-Strike player, even a casual, experiences this, which is when you're in these clutch scenarios, do you trust all the info your team gave you on the comms? Are you a guy who just likes to go off what you've seen? How do you manage that? Because everyone knows the famous thing is if someone thinks they saw someone but they didn't, you can get completely fucked, right? So how do you manage it normally?
Not 100%, no. I mean, in our team, we have issues when people are talking sometimes when they're dead. And for me, this actually goes all the way back to MAUs, because in MAUs, we used to do a lot of dead talk, is what we call it. And we used to do a lot of dead talk. And like Chris J was doing it really well. Some other players were like learning it. And then I think I got used to doing it in MAUs, and like as Chris J was doing it really good, I was kind of was learning and like when to talk and what tone to talk with and what kind of information you want to give to your teammates like when you're dead. And it's hard to know what the player wants to know or what he wants to hear. Maybe he doesn't want to hear anything at all, but sometimes you just like repeat information. Maybe someone said something like 30 seconds ago and then it kind of gets lost, or people forget about it and just repeat something, or you just remind like basic things like what the timer is at, what the run timer is at. And I don't know, maybe sometimes you do see like a shoulder which the player doesn't, and then you're like, oh, he's there.
Right.
That happens less of the time. So in phase, we definitely, I think I'm doing it pretty often. Some players do it less, but I'm used to doing it. So it gives us, I think, a small advantage when I'm doing it. But coming back to like when people say to me in clutch, I am very like a detailed person and a specific when I play. So obviously you have a rule when you clutch, you really don't want to talk unless it's like unbelievably necessary. Like it is impossible to for a player to know, for example,
the bomb was dropped somewhere or something weird,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So like when the bomb is dropped, something like that, and then when you clutch, you generally have this rule where people don't talk, and all the information that was relayed before, positions, or like let's say you need a gun where the gun was dropped, I think that you can trust. That's like normal kind of information. But sometimes people do talk when you're in a clutch. Like you heard him there, or you heard him in A or B position. And I think in those sort of moments, I kind of don't listen to whatever the person is saying, because I can obviously also get that information from my own point of view. And there's been a few scenarios where I've clutched around, and during the clutch, someone said something which turned out to be false. So then, like, it is kind of hard, and it's kind of, it can trigger a person sometimes. Sure. 'Cause it is like, I'm the one who's playing. I see everything, what's going on. And it's not only me, it's everyone else in that team as well. So it can cause like small conflicts when you do like bad dead talk, sort of say.
As you say, obviously you do have the rep that you're this like passive permalurk player, etc. But what's funny is I've noticed, this is one of those weird things why I want to ask you about this, which is there's actually a thing that even the casters have noticed, and they mention it in every FaZe game when it was the end of the 2022, which is whenever you guys used to play on Inferno, which is obviously one of the best maps for FaZe back then, famously on CT side, you would always, at the end of the half on CT side, make a bunch of plays in the apartments, like usually on like the 28th or 29th round or whatever. That's when Rops always does like an aggro pushed up the boiler or the steps or something. Now what's funny is, even though the casters themselves noticed that, I noticed a lot of opponents, it just works against them. It still worked even after they said that on the broadcast. Like what would you say to this? Like, is it, are you conditioning the opponent? How are you getting away with this each time? Because like I said, it did seem to happen quite a lot.
It does happen a lot, but also I think it's sort of just how I play Inferno in general. I think obviously, I play Pit on CT sides, but compared to other Pit players, I am definitely the most aggressive ones. I would say pretty rarely I am actually in Pit, but that's just what you call a position. And I mean, I like to be aggressive and in their face. I think it works out better for me. You kind of, this old style of always playing in Pit, I think Axile is really good at it. Like, back in the days, Astralis was like the perfect team.
Oh, of course, with Magus, yeah.
It was Magus and Pit. They had this incredible chemistry on A side, and then it was like you just couldn't enter the bomb site, basically. But I think it's hard for us to get that kind of chemistry and be perfect on the site. And we're like a team who just plays better in Chaos. And for me, it also suits better on Inferno to play like that. So I think we just capitalize on that. But I think the moment when I do find these positions successful is either I go into it blind with just a really good feeling for it, or full of confidence and believing that I can win the duel, or then just analyzing like a few rounds, see what the patterns are and see how they like to take the map control in apartments, let's say, and see if I can abuse the timing somehow or get a flash in and stuff like that.
The problem with the role of being a lurker is I feel like it's the most obvious one to be criticized, because the problem is, to a casual fan just watching in GoTV or on the stream, if they see you do a lurk where essentially you don't catch the right timing and it looks like you just baited everyone in your team all died, they don't maybe know that like you're a half second off, or you're looking for some like, I don't know, piece of utility or a rod or a call that would have changed what you did on the round. But at the same time, this is why it's tough. Obviously, those timings are everything. Like, if you actually can catch people and backstab them and just go, those are free kills. Like, that's why you can win, like, impossible 1v4s. Because, like, we're talking about, when we say 1v4, we're not talking about you're stuck in the pit and you have to fight four people at once. Like, these are ones where, as you say, you often have the initiative at the beginning. You can maybe they don't know where you are, but you can find the first guy. Like, is it tricky within FaZe? Do they totally trust you on all these? Like, because I've told Carrigan sometimes, in general, I do like the fact he's, like, empowers his stars and lets them play their game. But I have said that there are some maps where I felt like I would just be like, are you ever going to come along, Rob? So you're just going to be lurking on that side of the map the whole game. Like, what's the dynamic like? Is it a negotiation? Do they just trust you to know what you're doing?
I think the way that looks is also map dependent.
Okay.
I mean, what you said now is like, if I'm alone on the other side of the map and like four people are executing, and then it's like, am I coming or not? Am I going to overstay or lurk behind the other bomb side to get a backstab in or whatever. That's, I would say it's map dependent. Inferno sure. is the most notable one because it is the type of map where you need to have this extremity on A side, and when you want to execute B, you kind of want to have four players, sometimes five. But it's just the nature of my playstyle, I would say, because on Inferno, it's tough to play on apartments because you kind of, if you want to go B, you kind of have to jump down from apartments, make a step or two, and then like give your opponent some information. And that's what I always hate to do is, you know, just give some unnecessary information and potentially ruin the whole plan because they could read into that and maybe just push mid or whatever and read the B execution incoming. But on other maps, I think it's less on other maps because you have more chances. Inferno is definitely the one where it's pretty hard to play an aggressive lurk on A side, for example. Well, if you want to peek mid, there's probably an op staring at your face.
Sure.
If you want to peek mid, there's probably also five corners you have to clear when you go into it with a rifle. So like on other maps, let's say Mirage, you want to play on the T-lurk on A side, you could easily peek many angles one by one and just isolate things. But Inferno, it's really hard. Same for other maps like Overpass. Nuke is really easy to play as a lurk. I think Nuke is a map which I love to play because on T lobby as a lurk, you kind of hear the whole map. You hear A side, you hear ramp, you hear the rotating B, you hear like even the guys outside. So it's so easy to put together a picture. If the CTs are playing aggressive outside on Nuke, maybe they're two players, maybe they're three, and there's a guy throwing you a Molotov on A side, and some nades thrown on ramp. You can put the picture together really fast and find out where the missing player is or where is the missing gap or whatever and see what advantage you can have. And that's what I love about being like a lobby player on Nuke, because you can have that sort of freedom to do basically everything. You can lurk out ramp, can peek A side from two avenues, you can just sneak your way down vents somehow if you find the gap. There's a lot of options, and yeah, it just definitely goes map by map, I would say. On Inferno, I agree, I sometimes overstay, and I sometimes maybe I tend to just make a mistake in those sort of rounds. There's also a round, I actually now remember, there's also a round in the major final against Na'Vi on Inferno. The last round, which we played on the overtime, it's a round where I overstay, but we win because I overstay.
Right.
I think the scenario is that it's a 4-on-4, turns into a 4-on-3 while we're executing into B site. I'm close mid. There's like 20 seconds left. And I think Brookie calls for like turn around or like rush A, because I'm close to mid. They see 20 seconds that you could still make it to the other bomb site. And then I sneak up long. The only player left on A is Bit. And I find that kill, which is the most important kill of that round. If I don't find the kill, we lost. So because of me overstaying, I find the kill on long. We win the map on Inferno. And we go into Nuke. So sometimes that can also, you know, win you scenarios. So it goes hand to hand. I agree, sometimes I overstay and it's bad, but it can also win you a round.
Fair enough. What about this? Who is Rops's favorite lurker? Like, if you had all those, you know, gun to your head to save your life, who would you trust to win you a round? Who would close the game for Rops?
I need to think a bit.
Can be a historical one if you want. It's up to you. You tell me.
I've never really thought about it like this. I guess Gedrite is also...
Oh, classic, you know, okay.
You know, classic. But I can't remember. Did Flasher play any lurk roles?
I mean, in theory, yeah. You used to do loads of that shit, right? Yeah. I would say he's more the borderline of support and lurk, but yeah, I think so.
I mean, just the player in general, which I always like to watch and learn from, is Flasher, because he always had these unbelievable timings and ways to just mess with your opponent's head, because he was so good at producing something out of nothing. kind of scenarios. And he was so, I think, innovative in some positions. So I like to look at him when I was playing.
Right. One of the things that's weird is because we're doing this interview when CS2's out and you had all the success in CS2 and the team's doing awesome, everyone's back to being fine with FaZe and there's no complaints anymore. But you'll remember this. After the Blast Paris Major, dude, everyone wanted like Carrigan caked or like Rain has to be replaced or, you know, like maybe they should like, people were talking like that lineup was done. Like that 5-man lineup should just let you know it's had its time. It's won the shot. They made it sound like Pro League was like, you just got over the line, but then the team's done and, you know, the games are starting badly. Did you ever have a sense before CS2, like maybe we've had our success or maybe we can't overcome, maybe we have to make a roster, but did you have any negative thoughts yourself around this time?
I think it was pretty clear, or at least people were aware that if nothing was going to be achieved in CS2 in the first few months, maybe like by the major of next year, there would be changes, obviously, because that was the only thing going for us at that point of time. We had achieved everything at that point, and then we've experienced a low, which it was really hard to come out of, and we didn't know if we were going to come out of. So just looking forward to CS2 was like the main thing left for us, and we had to get results there, or there probably would have been changes down the line. That's the way we looked at it.
When you got, obviously Twists now has left the lineup and was with you for that time into CS2, right? Who was this player to you? Because obviously, like in theory, that's not a player you'd have expected to probably ever play with. I assume he'd be on North American teams his whole career. So it's kind of an unusual player to get into a European team. How do you think he was used in the team and what was the experience of playing with him like?
I think first of all, he did change some roles. For me, when I joined the team, he did play a few of the ones which I do now. So he is very sacrificial in the way of just giving up for your teammates, but also the way he talks and the way he plays. He never has a problem, doing something for a teammate or it's really hard to have an issue with him in general, because he is like a down-to-earth guy, and he's never getting any like provocative, or he's just really simple to talk to, and he understands feelings, he understands different people's personalities, it's you don't want to hurt players in a team because it's going to cause more conflicts and more issues down the line. So he is a really good person in general, and I think his aim is definitely one of the best I've ever seen when I've played with him, because you could put him in a clutch on a 1-on-3 and you know he's gonna hit 3 headshots instantly. Like, he's that type of player. I always liked spectating him when I was playing, and I think sometimes he needed maybe a little push, like to if he's having like a rough game or maybe a bad game or these sort of things, it helped him if like I was like taking control of the round and telling him to trade me, like I'll go, let's say I'm having a good game but he's having a bad game, I would love to go first and get the entry, maybe not, and then he can trade me and be in a better position because maybe he had a rough game and I don't had that many chances. So we had a really good chemistry in that sense. And same goes for me. Like, he would do things for me as well. So he was a team player, that's for sure.
One thing I want to ask you about regarding Carrigan as your in-game leader from this FaZe period is, if people know Carrigan before this era of FaZe when he rejoined, actually he did have that rep of like choker. And by the way, I was a friend of it. I consider it's justified. Like, there were a lot of big moments where it's not that he always directly choked, but put it this way, I would say he had issues making like the big play or the big call in those tight rounds, which can look like the same thing. So if people remember the old teams he was in, they would often either win big or lose the really close game, and hence why he had such a tortured career. It's not just FaZe that's had all these amazing comebacks and great wins. It feels like Carrigan's style, like he's actually like leveled that part of his game up, hasn't he? Like it seems like now people say he's the best in sort of the clutch time moments of making a call, or like obviously the hero one everyone remembers, you referred to earlier, was that Dallas game, that crazy one where you just wrote it onto that site where like, yeah, that's such an insane gamble. If that doesn't work, you look like dickheads and the game's over. Like who has Carrigan been the second time around you've worked with him? Has he changed as an in-game leader, did you think?
I think he's obviously taken a step back in terms of like micromanaging, because that's not what the team needs compared to what we needed in MAUs. But he's, I think, more demanding of the players just because of the quality. He knows what he needs in order to make the round work, and what he needs to just win the tournament in general. So I think he's learned that over the years, and also with us now over the years, he knows exactly in what kind of positions we need to be in, like in terms of how the round plays out. Like you want Brokey in this position to put the AWP in, you want Robs in this position so he can clutch, and he knows how to get into those type of positions pretty simply. And sometimes like he sacrifices himself a lot in the game. Like he'll go first any round he can. That's the sort of mentality he has if that's gonna set the team up. Sometimes it could be too much. Like he needs to take a step back. Like if let's say he dies five rounds in a row, he probably isn't feeling as well. Like, and that, like if we're not converting those rounds especially, then it's not going as well. But he has no problem doing that. We convert those rounds more often than not. And lately he's also been getting some entries on those attempts. So I think just working with better pieces is obviously the number one thing, which is helping him. What else?
Do you think he's more clutch now?
he's definitely won a few more clutches now as well. I think it just comes with the brand.
Right, when CS2 came along, no one really knew what to expect at all. Like, obviously, people had played it a bit in, like, the beta or whatever, but no one knew when the pro tournament start, anything. Like no one knew, would the AWP be good or not? Will the top team still be the top team? Maybe some random team becomes the best team. Like, and the joke is, Carl almost did that at the first event. It looked like, holy fuck, if they win this, they're not even supposed to be in the final. So people wondered, right? As I said earlier in the interview, I know you're someone who's putting in mad hours and trying to be on the cutting edge and final, and you aren't one of these people, like, simply just played, say, in CSGO till the last minute and then was like, oh, time to switch. Like, you were putting in the hours. Like, did you already know coming into Sydney, like, FaZe will be a good CS2 team? You'll be a good CS2 player? Did you know it?
I think never can't know. I think that's putting too much effort or, like, emphasis on that. But we had a really good feeling that we would do well. Obviously, we've had played, like, many of us had played a lot. Like, we were streaming and playing together. We were playing on our off times just for fun and with friends. So we had a good amount of experience going into the first tournament in Sydney. And yeah, just having all the ideas which we made and like the theory which we created, it definitely helped. And then when you play those in matches and the theory which you created works in the matches, it just gives you like this confirmation that you've done well and your effort has not gone to waste in a way. So yeah, when you get the first win in CS2, I think that's when you just boost your confidence and you find your work that you've done really well. And I think the new opportunities in CS2, like throwing smokes across the map, breaking up the smokes. We've done a lot of like different versions on how and when things should be done and what kind of opportunities you can create with different people at different timings. So there's a lot of new stuff, and yeah, just putting all that to work in Sydney, I think it helped really, really well that we got off to like a good start. When I mean, we did lose the first best of one against Gamer Legion, but then we won against Vitality. We're going to make roster changes nevertheless, but they were a pretty strong team back then, and I think that match helped us win the tournament.
Right, look, whenever any team wins all the tournaments and goes on a massive win streak, it's not really like genius to go, I think they've figured out the game the best. Like, that's obviously an obvious statement to make. But to actually get into some of the specifics, I wanted to ask you, like, first of all, you alluded to things the team had worked on. Another thing is, I know there are certain pro teams who really did just turn up at some of these first tournaments and they barely had played CS2, or they played a few scrims, but they definitely didn't feel comfortable. Is it the case that FaZe had actually put in, like, proper time? I mean, it looked like you guys already had a bunch of the smokes no one else had, right?
Well, it definitely did help. It's also like knowing the mechanics, and I think the whole Peeker's Advantage thing just also played into us. Like, we are a team who takes duels and relies on chaos.
I mean, you so like to whole, rush as well, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So the whole idea of playing CS and taking a peek is like just boosts our level of play. When you know you can just take a peek and shoot an AWP in the face and not die and do that thing pretty consistently, it's going to help our team, because we're a team who likes to just, you know, take the duel, go for the 50-50 high-risk play. And that's what you kind of expect from FaZe also. So that definitely helped. But also having the practice and the hours before, having that just little experience and little edge on other teams, which maybe played a bit less, is also helpful.
By the way, being as you are a rifler, and people know that the narrative the last few years goes, bad luck if you're a rifler, because only AWPers get to be, like, you know, HLTV number one, they're all the best players, their stats look the best, partly because it's such an extreme, like, you kill them or you don't gun, so obviously the plus-minus stat always looks awesome, the rating looks great because they get to survive, right? As someone who's a rifler, in CS2, obviously all the AWPers have been crying, like, oh, the game just went unfair, like, do you think it's actually, is the AWP okay in CS2? Was the AWP too powerful in CSGO? What are your thoughts?
The AWP is more powerful in CSGO, that's for sure. I think it's going to take some time to get used to in CS2. There's a lot of new, like, just ways of playing. Obviously, you have to care for a smoke, like, all the time when you're an AWP, because someone could break it up and there's a guy in there ready to shoot you in the face. Or just people running around and, like, the way the models are, like, moving and jumping, like, it's just different. So you have to get used to that. So it's going to take some time, but I think it's more powerful in CSGO, but not that by that high of a degree. And I think when you compare, like, the top players and being AWPers, I think that's just a case of the problem of having Simple and Zywu. Like, if you didn't have those two players, it's like a 50-50 if the best player is a rifler or an AWPer, I would say. Because it's just a problem of Simple and Zywu being that good.
Right. One of the things I do want to ask is this. When the team had that streak where you won the LANs and the online tournament as well, and this everyone was like tracking the number of how many matches in a row you've won, right? Obviously, it's the beginning of a brand new game. So the problem is, like, I feel like people didn't really get hyped about that streak till almost at the end of it, because people sort of felt like, because it's a new game, I think people actually expected different teams to win tournaments. Or we also had MR12 came in, so the matches are a bit shorter. It feels a bit more random or whatever, or like more teams can win the matches. It's more variance, as you say. What was your thought during this streak? Like, could you tell that you were in like an epic streak? Could you tell we're just going to keep winning, we're going to win the next match? Was there a sense that something special was happening?
I think the LAN tournaments were, again, very FaZe stylistic, just close matches. Could have gone either way, but we had that X factor again somehow, and we just took it over the line barely in some matches. I think the online tournament was pretty convincing, but that's obviously not so important in the bigger picture. So again, I think it plays into us that we have the early start and the early confidence. But then by the time we finished the online tournament, we're like running out of strats. So we're going from event to event. After we finished the grand final, the online match in our home, and then like the next day we're flying to the Asian tournament, and like we're having zero strategy besides the ones we've already used. So we were just like, we're working overtime in the tournaments, trying to come up with something new, and also try to like dry run it and make sure it works before the match starts. So it was a lot of hard work in between the tournaments as well, and during the tournaments, because there were so many moving pieces and there's so much stuff that can happen. Maybe the stuff you did, like some of the stuff did not work out, so you had to change something up or even just improvise in the matches and after the matches, because again, there's so many moving pieces. So it was a lot of hard work, and I think by the end of this year I was definitely extremely tired of just playing, because I think I've thought about CS so much for like the last 3 to 4 months that it's just hard to have a time for yourself.
Right. If I say to someone during this time period, just look at the MVPs, look at the stats. Actually, thus far, I could say Rops is the best CS2 player. Would you agree?
I think it's Sayu, but okay. I don't know what the stats say.
He played awesome in this last tournament. I'll give you that. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Why is it not you?
Zaibu is Zaibu. I think CS2 has not affected him much.
And, okay.
Well, Simple has not even tried to play CS2 in a tournament yet. So we don't know how well he plays. But I mean, stats say what they say. I think I've had a really successful run to start off CS2. And I mean, I'm pretty proud of the work so far. I did put a lot of hours in, so it's nice to have this stuff rewarded, I guess. And I think it's also like a problem, I would say, because when people say I'm the best player, it creates so much unnecessary like topics online. And obviously, I think Saibu is the best, and I think there's nothing to discuss.
Well, what about this then? Obviously, this year, last year, 2023, you did. Look, I'll say you won 4 MVPs, because I don't give a fuck about online competitions, mate. But they'll say 5 because they count the Thunder Pick thing. But whatever, 4 MVPs when they're on LAN, it's pretty impressive. Like, it's pretty good in a year. There's only going to be 1 or 2 players can win that kind of amount, right? I asked you in the talk to Thorin all those years ago, can you be the best player in the world? Like, essentially, can you do what like someone like an equal would do if he was in that position? Like, just be the best player, right? After this last year, even if you don't think you were the number one, like, you got to be in the mix. Like, spoiler, when HLTV at the time of recording this, they haven't told us where Rops is. Like, he's almost certainly going to be top 5. I think he'd probably be 3rd personally, 2nd or 3rd. I think you'll be right. Was this the best year of your career, 2023? It looked like you had it. Like I say, this year you actually could make a case you were the best player, at least, even if you don't agree.
Individually, definitely the best year of my career. Definitely the highest I've peaked in like the most important tournaments. Even the EPL, it wasn't like a prestigious tournament, but
sure,
for our team at the time, it was like the most important tournament of our lives at that moment. So yeah, just closing out in like a dominant fashion for me individually adds up to this year, and then like the performances throughout the year, and then now closing it out with CS2 is just a very successful year indeed. I think yeah, there's no other year that's been so close.
I mean, in CS2, obviously, like, you've just had the first tournament with Frozen, the rest all had twists. But if we just look at the two lineups combined, you're in the final every single time. There's been 4 lands, you won 2 of them. You're in the final of the other two. And quite frankly, the Blast 4 one was implausible to win. Maybe the World one was a bit more convincing by them, right? CS2 in general, surely this can't continue, right, Rob? You can't reach being every final. Like, FaZe hasn't just like completed Counter-Strike. Like, well, how do you yourself look at this early period? Like, because on the one hand, you are like the number one team, or on aggregate, you've been the best team, but I'm sure you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. So how do you frame this current part? Because I feel like the problem with CS2 at the moment for me is, even Blast World Final is still like an 8-team tournament. It's still a smaller line. It's not, to me, until we come to Katowice, that's when like CS2 really begins for me. I want like the massive stadium event, you know. I want the bit, like you're saying about Rain, I want the event where the legends get activated or people choke on the fact. What do you think of the run so far? Like, it's been amazing. 4 finals is amazing.
Yeah, we have had like a joke in the team where I think after the online event, we had this streak of winning, and we kept saying that like, we tried to like anti-jinx ourselves. So we said, like, no way we win the 11th match. No right. way we win the 12th match.
Okay.
And then we kept winning and kept saying it until we lost to Vitality. So I think Vitality are obviously the team to beat right now. I think whenever we face them, it's going to be a hard matchup. And it's rough to say who's going to win, maybe a 50-50. Maybe they even have an edge right now because Saibu is looking so strong. So Vitality is going to be the team to beat for short period of time for now. And I think that run we've had so far is definitely going to set us up for next year. I think it's like the perfect scenario where you want to be in to start out the new year, because you have that confidence from last year, especially now changing a player. Like, that was like the most important part, to get Frozen in and get a bit of experience in Blast World Final. So the goal there actually was to play all 7 maps, which we ended up doing, except for Vertigo, obviously. So 6 maps, sorry. I get the experience in, because now we're starting out with the obviously Blast groups, but then it's RMRs, and then it's the Major, which is like the most important thing for now. And that's where our sights are at. So it sets us up nicely, the run we had last year, that's for sure.
Right. One thing I would actually like to ask is, your team is one of the teams that, despite the fact when I talked about in CSGO when you played Na'Vi on that Insane Anubis, that was back when no one liked the map and barely anyone was good on it. Like, it seems like actually it is one of the maps that your team embraced. Like, what do you think about Anubis now? Is this one of those maps that has it finally gotten out of that period where, like, I think Vertigo is still in it, where people still just secretly hate it and think it should be out of the map pool? Do you think, is Anubis like a real map for you now?
Anubis is a real map, but it definitely has the problems it had when it came out. I think the layout is missing like a few rotation points, like getting to A site when the T's have executed and trying to retake A site is extremely hard as a CT. And like, I feel like there could be like a thing added in the map which makes the life easier for CTs, because Anubis is still a T-sided map. At least in our team, we feel like, and many other top teams, I would say. There's teams who start on T-side Anubis, and we like to do the same, because it's so much easier to play those rounds. And then, let's say you get a 9, now it's MR12, so you get a 9-3 T-side half. Now you just need a pistol round on CT and just convert like another gun round to win the game. But if you start out on CT side and get a rough half, and now you're on the T-side and you have to start coming back on the T-side, it's like a mental thing also. So Anubis, I think, is in a pretty bad place, I would say. I think many players don't like it. The rotation problems are, I think, the biggest ones. But yeah, I hope to see some changes to that map.
Let me ask you a similar question to what I asked you in that old interview then. Being as, for you individually, your career is not only peaking, but individually you're having the best year of your career, MVP awards. Like I say, you're almost certainly going to get a very high placing from the HLTV Player of the Year list. For a future year, so it could be 2024, 2025, do you think Rops can be the number one player in CS2? Like, right now, you're one of the people who people say, you with your youth, and like same with Zebu, so many years you can play still. You guys could be the GOATs of CS2, right? If this thing lasts 10 years or whatever.
I'm going to be honest. As long as Zaibu is there, as long as maybe Simple comes back, Simple is there, I think competing against those two, for me, is like...
You put them on a different level? You don't think of them just as your peers?
Because I think they just have that sort of X factor in them. They obviously have the teams like kind of playing more around them, sure. Whereas like, I'm always relying on my team performance, and if my team plays well, I'm always in a good position, but you can't always have that. So I think those two players are like always going to be nearly impossible to compete against on like a individual level. So like, if I'm right behind them, I'm like, that's where I can dream to be, I would say.
By the way, in interviews and on camera and at the events, you always come off as very like self-effacing and like quite humble, etc. Like, to be as good as you are, there must be a part of you is kind of cocky, right? There must be a part of you thinks, fuck, I'm going to beat this guy. I'm better than them. I should be in this team. You know, there must be some of you has that. You have a little bit of an ego?
Not so much outside the game or inside the game. There's sometimes in matches like where like, in a round. I don't know what causes it, but it's like just some random round. You have this gut feeling that, okay, I'm just gonna press W and go headshot this guy in a round. And that's like, I would call that like an ego peak, where like you think you're better than the player you're playing against. But I think that's kind of the mindset you have to have at all times when you're playing against anyone. But I do that quite often nowadays, at least, that I kind of do some ego peaks, I would say.
By the way, I do notice in general, one of the things about the region of the world you're from is even though you guys are right next to Russia, where famously they often have quite broken English, I notice everyone from your countries has fucking amazing English. Like, same with like Brokey from Latvia. Like, they can all speak fluently. Like, I think people would be shocked sometimes if they didn't know what country you come from, right? In all these international teams you play in, do you feel like you're just totally fine? Is English just the normal language of Counter-Strike to you at this point, Robs, after all these years? Do you ever have any difficulties or anything tricky anymore?
At this point, it is very natural. I think it's only when you're starting out and then like your mind is talking in English. But there's also a point to say is it does help if you what language you think in your mind, because there's people who speak in one language and they think in the other. But
sure.
I do quite often think in English as well, so that helps. So I think for people to who want to get better, I think if you start thinking in the language that you want to speak, it's going to help a lot. And then you just basically say out the words you're already thinking of. But I mean, now for me, it's very simple. It's so natural. I've been at this position for like 7 years now, like even more. I've basically never played in a team where I would speak Estonian, my mother language.
Oh, right.
So it was always very easy for me, like playing PUGs, speaking English, playing FPL and speaking English, and then going into a team, speaking English. Just a very natural process.
What do people back home, by the way, think about all this career? You've had this insane esports career and winning millions of dollars and bringing gold bars back and so on. What do they think about that, the people back home?
Who do you mean?
Whoever, like, your family, friends, just the people around you.
Well, everyone has respect, I think. Well, the thing is, it's not a sport. Like, you don't do any physical things. It's still like professional gaming or whatever you want to call it. And that's what I kind of agree with. And everyone still has respect, for me, because that's the normal thing to do when anyone is like at the highest level of any job or sport or whatever. You're going to have respect for him, and especially if it's bringing like attention to me, to my country, to, you know, whoever I'm involved with. It's a really big thing, and it was different when I started, obviously. I had some issues like joining MAUs, and typically my mother, like, she's like kind of traditional, not like the extreme type, but she, you know, wants her son to go to school and get a proper job, stuff like this. So this is like a normal thing, you know. And then, yeah, when I'm playing games all the time and getting like a opportunity to work, so to say, doesn't seem real to her. So
sure.
It took some time, and obviously when the money's flowing in, they kind of stop caring, because they see the point, and that's all that matters at that point. Because if you can make a living, you know, that's what's gonna give my mother like peace of living, you know, like
peace of mind. Yeah,
peace of mind. Yeah, exactly.
Right. One thing I want to ask you is more like the same sort of scenario, but for you individually, because I don't know how much you know about CS 1.6, like the esports scene, but back then there was no mouse sports or fucking FaZe Clan. We have these international teams. Essentially, unless you could go to like America or something, which is very rare people ever did, you have to just play in your region or in your case. It's like the meme of like, you know, the meme now of like better learn Chinese. Like back then it would be like better learn Russian or something. You're not going to, there's not going to be a team from, like you said, it's not, it's time from Estonia is going to be like fucking playing Fnatic in like a CS 1.6 final. channel. So back then, if you were people like Oscar, or I mean, I know Nico wasn't really around back then, but if he'd have been a pro at the time, there is no place to go to have this type of a career you've had now. And also, the scene was tiny. Like, if you look at your career now, you're making 1 month salary, like what, I don't know, like Forrest used to make it a whole year of salary in CS1.6. It's kind of surreal, right? To be the guy, a nerd from Estonia, who's in the best team of the world, winning all the, like, is it ever surreal to you? Have you gotten used to it now?
Nowadays, you are used to it, but I mean, it is in general very surreal and very insane that I've got into this position at all. I mean, it didn't, like, you couldn't even earn this money a few years ago, but now you can. And you're just kind of, I guess, just pioneering it, and hopefully for the future. I mean, now there's a lot of people that look up to you, and like there's kids wanting to be pros. Like,
sure.
You even see some of those kids becoming pros, because I know for like a fact that a lot of these young players now, like Monesi, Dunk, like some years ago, they were just kids going to school and playing pugs, and then like they have better options because of, you know, what players like me and I don't know, Zaivu and these kinds of elite players who have now years of experience have done to just take it to the next level. And all the players before us as well, as you said, like Forrest, and I mean, Neo is coaching our team now. Like, he's had an insane career. So it's gone to an extreme depth, and it's still evolving. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about like players being overpaid and organizations burning money and stuff like that. I think it's all gonna come back to where it makes sense in some time. It's definitely not gonna go away. There's definitely, you know, a big market still, and everyone, there's a lot of players and people watching games and wanting to become pro. So it's a very interesting thing, and yeah, I mean, none of this existed some time ago.
One of the things I always said when that year was going on of 2022, when FaZe was winning all these tournaments, is like, obviously, because you're not winning in a super dominant fashion, I can't say this is like the best team I ever saw play CSGO, but I actually do think that was the most clutch lineup I think I've ever seen in CSGO, mate. Like, even if Astralis was clutch, like, they didn't always have to be. And sometimes they just won the game by just being better and having better tactics and better team play. Like, I've never seen a team come back as many times in a game, win as many, like, overtimes that should be 50-50, or sometimes, like I say, you, like, literally, like, lose your map pick and then just win theirs and meet them in the third map. Like, if you were to think of all the teams, you've seen them all in CSGO, right? Right. This team, it probably isn't the best CSGO lineup ever, right? But do you think it could be any team in history? If I could put you all in like some hypothetical tournament where it's one tournament and everyone just plays, FaZe Clan could win this tournament against all the great teams.
I think this team could, for sure. It helps that the meta is like evolved, and I think at this point you know how to play against any like playstyle. So like the 2018 Astralis, the nowadays Dream VP lineup.
Sure.
Like playing against Simples and Zaivus, like you kind of evolved over the time to play against anyone and adjust your own play style to give you the best advantage. And I think that's what we're really good at, capable of doing. Again, we're like a team which relies so much on chaos and this fast gameplay that we do. And I think that sort of style can work against anyone if you just make some adjustments.
Are you someone where when the tournaments come along in CS2, do you still think of it as like a new game or a different game? Or is it, because to me, sometimes I do just think like, it's kind of a CSGO. Like, it's a bit different, but it's like, it's, put it this way, it's way closer to CSGO than CSGO was to the past Counter-Strikes. You know, like, is it a totally new game to you? Do you view it separately, or do you think a lot carries over from CSGO? Where you at in that sense?
It's a fact that like most of it carries over from CSGO, and that's why I think it's kind of like CSGO. It is a new game, but I see it more CSGO, definitely. Like 90% of it is the same. There's visual updates, there's a few new mechanics with smokes and you know, whatever effects you have in the game, but everything else is pretty much the same. And like in a completely new game, I would say you would have more meta-defining changes. You would have more changes to the map pool. You would have changes to the map layouts and stuff like that. But I think just most of it is the same. So it's more like CSGO to me, definitely.
Right. Another thing about your career is because in Phase 2022, you guys just won so much and so quickly. I think people haven't noticed how quickly your like resume has gotten insane. Like, not only have you done the Major, the Grand Slam, Kilo and Katowice, but if you go and look, I looked it up. If I take away the Thunder Picks, I won't do it online ones. You guys have won like, you and your career have won like 16 trophies. Like, if a fan's thinking, how many is that though? Like, spoiler, the guys with the most trophies ever in CSGO are like 25, 26. Like, you're actually getting right up there. Are you someone where do you have like, I've heard the people who win a lot have like an insatiable thirst. Like, even if they win, you know, like 2 weeks later, they're like super horny to win the next tournament. Are you like that? Do you have like do you want to amass all the trophies? Do you have it in your mind?
Yeah, for sure. I think winning is the only thing that keeps you going. Losing is probably the toughest thing you do because there's so much that comes with that. It's always the stress, the failure, the not living up to expectations. So winning is like the only thing that gives you this satisfaction when you are like on this high level of competition, because you lose so often. Like, you know, it's nowadays it's like anyone's game, and every time you lose it just sucks so much. So I think winning is drives you the most.
Right, you are known, in line with what I said earlier, to also on camera be quite stoic, we would say. Like, you don't give away too much, you have a good poker face. Even if you win, like, one of those insane bullshit rounds, like, half the time you just do a little smirk or look as though you didn't even think it was a big deal. Oh, yeah, I won the round, what do you know? Like, right, here's my question. After a massive match you've won or a tournament, have you ever cried? Have you ever, like, backstage, has the emotion ever got to you?
It was the Grand Slam win in EPL, I think. That was, like, the first moment ever when I was a bit emotional, I would say.
What were you feeling in the moment? What was going through your head?
It just hit me. Like, it, even before winning it, like, it was Ancient against Cloud9, and we were up, and, like, I knew we had this in the bag because we were playing super well. Everything was clicking. We were reacting very well off each other. So, like, I think we were, like, 3 rounds away from winning, and, like, I just knew we were going to take this, and like even before the win, like it started hitting me because it was obviously like a big goal for us to win the Grand Slam, and for me also like a small dream because you see the other best of the best, like the GOATs, like Astralis, Na'Vi, Liquid having their fast run to the Grand Slam, like these kinds of teams winning the Grand Slam, and you finally becoming a part of it is something, you know, something just so hard to explain. Like it's basically part of history. There's currently only 4 teams that have done it. And that sort of thing just hit me in that moment. And like, I was just like, I guess having small tears of joy and like just trying to get through the burst of emotion and like at the moment also like the confetti starts flying in and stuff like that. So it's a lot of things going through the head at that time.
Since you mentioned way earlier back in that section about lurking and clutches and, you know, what the balance is, you made it sound by your phrasing like you are very aware that fans have the perception that Rops is just some super beta and plays mega passive and doesn't ever do anything aggressive in the game. By the way, I'd say the analogy is it's kind of like what people say about Blame F now. Like, it doesn't matter how good his stats are. They're like, oh, okay, he's just baiting and killing ecos, right? When you said that, was there a little bit of like spice behind that? Do you think that, do you think fans are being like a bit dumb in that sense? Are they not seeing nuance to your game?
I think they're just picking out like single or maybe a few rounds of the game and then just sticking it to their head and pointing it out. But that's only what happens maybe like once or twice in the game. But they're not seeing the bigger picture. And I mean, it is, I guess, a little bit, but not entirely, because it obviously helps if you have a sort of an image and then you have this ace up your sleeve.
You can play off it, like you say, right?
Yeah, you can play off it. But, I mean, it is what it is. I guess everyone's going to get some sort of hate, whatever capacity they're in, like Saibu having no cultural impact or whatever, like this sort of thing.
True. That's the best example, true.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
At the end of this interview, Rops, do you have a final message? Do you have anyone you want to say hello to or thank?
Not much. Just happy to be part of this interview and hope it's been a good one and hope to see all the fans that I've seen this year and hope to see in the next one in the arenas as well.
Aita. I've had to make a lot of tough choices in my career, but thanks to the support of my Patreon community, the Skrilluminati, I never have to make tough financial decisions. So this video and all the rest on my channel are kindly supported by Ahmed Haju, Frisky, Mac Pugnaccio Rakula, Animosity, Jensen Gore, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and you know it if you've ever heard before, and you'll hear it many times in the future. A special thanks goes out to my main man, Jerry Kizminian. Do you want to ask a question in my video AMA? Do you want to be part of one of those long discussions where we talk about whatever you like in esports? Do you want teasers, find out who the upcoming guests are going to be? Or maybe you want to suggest a topic for a future Thorin's Thoughts type video? Well, if any of these perks or others appeal to you, put your money where your mouth is today and join the Skrilluminati by joining the Patreon link in the description box below.